Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years." Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and he was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking, And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds?
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. Okay. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You were doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we were already getting it from Blondon, technically.
Technically.
Yeah.
You just weren't talking to him.
I just wasn't talking to him.
Okay. So how did you end up meeting him?
I bought him.
You bought him?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically bought your connect.
Yeah.
So you told your middleman, I'm going to give you...
$60,000.
$60,000, and you introduced me to your connect. And you can walk away with that $60,000.
Yep. And then Blondon paid $60,000 as well.
To meet you?
Yeah, to meet me.
So the connect got $120,000 to essentially... walk away from that part of the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he got spooked, I heard. You know, somebody had got busted.
He was trying to get out of the game.
He was trying to get out of the game, so he felt... You
know. Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
So what's the solution?
So how do we get that?
Well, here's the thing. We got to recognize that wealth is intergenerationally created. Mm-hmm. Most people who get rich don't get rich in a lifetime. Oprah, that's once in a while. Bill Gates, that's once in a while. Most people are intergenerational wealth. That means what? That if black people want to catch up, we have to start saving wealth and passing it to the next generation. Our biggest problem ain't that we're splurging. It's that every time we splurge, we're stealing from our descendants. You're giving them no inheritance to get started with. But the white child, they're starting out $100,000 plus, a million dollars plus. And I think we have to become more strategic in the way that we do our health plans as well as our life insurance plans. Because what I'm learning with a lot of these white folks, a lot of them are getting their first, what you want to call a shock of wealth, through the life insurance policy of their parents.
We talk about that too, life insurance policy.
Yeah. So there's so many different strategies towards wealth that we're not even thinking about because black people, our selfishness, it's also based on our, what you want to call it, emergency consciousness, survival instinct. We're only worried about our life. We do not think about those who come after us. Now, you got to realize now, when we got out of slavery, white folks been already building wealth for a couple centuries.
Right.
We started behind the eight ball, okay? So you got to play catch up. How do you catch up with somebody who's 100 yards in front of you? You have to run faster than they are.
That means
we have to sacrifice our spending habits more than everyone else in order to catch up. How does a people who are at the bottom waste money more than people who are at the top? So not only are you not catching up, you're not even thinking about trying to catch up.
This is good. And we got 1,000 questions, and we know you got a flight.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate the time.
Thank you. No problem.
One fat meat juicy point. What would it be before you go on?
I would say that we have to build our own schools. Everything we're talking about, the only way it becomes normalized, the only way it becomes a part of the collective black consciousness is if the children are raised with it as a group. Remember, all progress is group work. It's teamwork. That means we need all the children in Jackson to be taught the principles of financial empowerment. All the children of Jackson to be taught how to eat healthy. All the children of Jackson to understand what black family means and why it's so important. Until then, it's just a specialty. As we spoke earlier, diet being a specialty, wealth is a specialty. Think about it. If you're black and you're in the know about money and the laws of finance, you are a specialty. You are an eccentricity. You are an oddity. That's the problem.
Because for white people, gaining wealth is a regular part of their everyday conversation. Even poor white people are regularly talking about wealth. Black people don't discuss wealth at all. We have to move it from the marginalized status it has and make it a mainstream topic of conversation.
Is there an answer? I know you can't just drop a 2-second answer.
No, no. Here's what I would say with the unity. Again, unity has to be incorporated into the collective consciousness, which means children have to be socialized to unite with one another. Remember, our kids are socialized to disunite as a principle, right? I've had first graders, 6 and 7, talking about how black your skin is, how cheap your clothes is, how nappy your hair. You're 6.
Yeah.
You're just your first year in school. How do you know all this?
Yeah.
The parents. We are teaching our kids to be Negroes. So the only way you're going to undo that is to teach them to be African, which is why I want my school to be residential. Because I know sending them back to the same house that created the illness after school is going to undo everything I do from 8 to 3. You got the kids for 16 hours. I got them for 8. I can't win. Because the brain is the creature of repetition.
Yes.
Whoever gets to this the most will rule it. What did Adolf Hitler say? Come up with a lie, keep on telling the lie, be consistent with it. It ain't got to be the truth. But the brain cannot resist the temptation to believe something that is regularly presented before it. Repetition wins. We give our kids to white folks for the first 18 years of their life, then we want to remake them into Africans for the rest of their life. That's ridiculous. The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12.
Yeah.
The formidable years of conditioning is birth to 12. We give that to white people.
Right.
And then when they turn 21, they already have habituated. Right. They already have a personality.
Yeah.
They already got hard habits.
Right.
And now we want to re-Africanize them.
Right.
Who does that?
Right.
What
right.
people have ever gotten free,
right.
giving the best years of their children
right.
to their oppressor, the manipulator?
Right.
Solar Now is a renewable energy company that began its operations in Uganda in 2011. It currently has 47 operational branches in Uganda and 9 operational branches in Kenya. Solar Now provides both small household systems, which range from 50 watt peak to 200 watt peak, and large home solar systems, which range from 250 to 3 kilowatts. These are both used for domestic and commercial purposes. Solar Now has been able to transform the rural commercial farmers by bringing products like a water pump.
I'm a farmer at Mvubu Village, Narigasa sub-count, in Chotera district. I have passion fruits, green peppers, I have coffee, oranges, and I have banana.
Just put water in this pipe because it helps the other machine to start.
So after putting that into the water, we put this panel and we connect it on the machine so that it starts. This one, we connect it on the panel after we put on. The water is going into the sprinklers, then the sprinklers will start irrigating. So ever since I joined Solar Now Water Farm, I reduced on my workers. I used to spend 50,000 a day on 10 workers, but years by now I am only spending just 10,000 on workers. Those 10 workers I had, they used to irrigate using the watering cans. But now the 2 workers I have, they only operate the Solar Now Water Farm. I irrigate every time I want to irrigate. The production increased 2 times. The passion fruit, you can see that they are very many on the plantation. They are very many. Since I got the solar now water pump, I get time for my family. I used to spend the whole day in my garden, my solar now water pump, but now I can get time for my family.
Solar now, in the process of transforming people's lives in Uganda, has now reached to 20,000 homesteads. We've served systems to 20,000 homesteads. And these are people who are largely initially off-grid.
When you buy it, you have 6 meters in parking. You have a motor here, which enables it to run physically without you attempting to use it manually. It has a pack here for spares that you need in case you want to elongate the pipes for distribution, or in case you want to convert when you're using sprinklers. It also has a handle here in case you want to run it manually, and a panel here in case you want to use it on solar. This pump can actually use to a tune of 5 sprinklers in 5 meters of spacing. Above the ground, it can do a height of 10 meters. And then on a hilly sloping ground, it actually has a distance of travel of 150. Then on a flat land, it's going to do a distance of 300 meters. So if at all you buy it and you need it for a specific kind of irrigation in your garden, You have to put into consideration that different parameters of use.
When you buy a solar system from Solar Now, you have an opportunity of acquiring the system on either cash or credit. And the credit period is up to 2 years, depending on your financial muscle. But you have to pay a minimum of 15% of the total cost of the system. And the other benefit that the customer...
We're going to go to the phone lines here momentarily. What's the number here? 619-768-2945. That's 619-768-2945. Press 1 to get into the host queue. And our jump-off topic for today, and we might touch on this tomorrow as well, is landscape literacy versus consumer mindset. Landscape literacy versus the consumer mindset. So, I want to cover some points here. I'll rifle through them for you. We have all these on the program notes here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you go to our Facebook page, which is Earth Wealth Forest. All right, hold on, let me clean that up. Build Solar Homes at Earth Wealth Forest. That's our Facebook page. Build Solar Homes, and Solar Homes is one word. That's one word. Build Solar Homes at Earth Wealth Forest. As a matter of fact, go there now. We're going to let's get into it right now. When you get to Build Solar Homes, Solar Homes is one word. Build Solar Homes at Earth Wealth Forest on Facebook. That's our Facebook page. Scroll down a little bit, and then you're going to see a map. And the map is titled, A Map of All the Places in the U.S. Where Nobody Lives. A Map of All the Places in the United States Where Nobody Lives. All right. And then Blog Talk page, we got two maps. All right, anyway, so let's deal with this one. Now, when talking about housing and real estate, there, in order to have a, what I would call a, well, a conversation that a person can be enlightened or learn from, you know, it's like playing a game of chess. If you want to get good at chess, the first thing that you need to master is the board. The board has 64 squares on it. Chessboard has 64 squares. And there's 16, to start the game, there are 16 spaces occupied on each side of the board. All right. But remove all the pieces, and you have to master that board first. Because each square has a number. Each square has a name and number, or a number. You got to master it. All right. Now, it's the same thing when it comes to housing and real estate. There's a vocabulary, there's a landscape vocabulary, there are landscape metrics. And there's landscape literacy, and there's landscape illiteracy, and there's the consumer mindset. And if you got a consumer mindset and you're not landscape literate, you might run into some difficulties, or you'll miss opportunities that you're standing right in the middle of. Standing right in the middle of, but you don't recognize it. So and a lot of confusion might come up with comparables. You know, well, this house costs this much here, so how much is the house next door, or how much is the house across the street? And to become landscape literate, when you hear those word terms, let's say they came out of my mouth, you're talking to somebody who has a consumer mindset. Now, I'm attempting to break, and I'll probably write an ebook on this. There, for the sake of this podcast or conversation, there are two mindsets that are involved here. You need to know who you're talking to, and you listen to what they're saying. There's a landscape mindset that somebody that knows terrain, the zoning, the different types of zoning, the different parts of the country, and the different uses for a particular piece of land. And then there's the consumer mindset. Now, I'll start off with some accounting terms. Because in accounting, this is accounting 101, there are different types of income. Now, most consumers have, they get a paycheck. They work, they get a paycheck. That's called earned income. Earned income. They get up, they go to work, they do their 9 to 5 or whatever hours they work. They get paid. That's called earned income. You have a lot of self-employed people that do this as well. Now, self-employed and having a business are two different animals. If you're the only person working and bringing in revenue, you're self-employed. That is not a business. A true business means you really don't have to show up. All right, now, but we'll cover that more on another day. So a consumer mindset, typically, they get a paycheck, They make earned income. They might make their money through Social Security or pension or retirement. If they get a big ticket item, they sell their home, the only home they got, or some relative dies and they sell their home. You know, they'll have to pay a capital gains income off of that. There's interest income that they get off their bank or money market account. You know, typically they might be part of a HOA, homeowners association, or if they got a condo, townhouse or condo, they pay condo fees. That's the consumer mindset. Those are all categories within the consumer mindset. Now, landscape mindset. Landscape mindset, they'll probably make most of their money, if not all of it, through passive income. That means they're not getting up every day and working a 9-to-5, but yet they get paid. That's passive income. All right. Profit income. Buy something for $1, sell it for $2, made a profit of $1. That's profit income. You have people that sell cars that way. You know, they might, you know, the 9-to-5 guy with the earned income, they might work a certain amount of hours and they get paid so much per hour or so much per week or get a salary, whereas the guy who's selling cars, you know, making profit income, he might make $500, $750 per car that he flips, but he might do 60 to 100 of those a month. So he'll earn in 1 month, but the guy who earns, who gets a paycheck or earn income, he earns in a month with the person that works the job for somebody else. He'll earn in a month what the other person earns in a year. Because he's working for profit income. Then there's portfolio income. There's rental income. And I mean, you can rent out a whole bunch of things, right? And, you know, I rent out a driveway. I also rent out property, you know, residential. Dividend income. Then I'm about to name some sources of real estate income that most people, you've heard of the names I'm going to call out, but you've never heard about how to earn money or set up your own. Hamlet income. You buy a few acres of land and you set up your own little town. The smallest unit would be a hamlet. There's no hard and fast definition on what a hamlet is. It can be an acre, it could be 2 acres. You know, it can have a couple of houses, it could have 3 or 4 houses on it, maybe 5. But that's a hamlet. Typically a hamlet is not an incorporated place. All right. The town is not incorporated. Then you have and that's a source of income, passive income. And people who have a landscape mindset, they think in those terms. So if you, well, let me go through a few of these before I bring up this comparison thing. Then there's village income. Villages are a little bit bigger than hamlets. Okay. A little bit bigger than hamlets, and depending on where you are on the globe, you know, I ran across some villages, quite a few, when I was overseas in Europe. And some of these villages have just 4 households. That's it. 4 households. Some villages I walked into, you know, had maybe 19 houses. That's it. You know. Then there's township income. Now, town could be incorporated or unincorporated. And that leads us to, if it's incorporated, It's municipal. And it can earn money through municipal income, through taxation. You might have a water company or another utility company. I know a little town, and a lot of little towns like this. But the one that I experienced is, I don't want to name it, but one town I went to is incorporated. It's over 100 years old. And right next door to it is another town probably just as old, over 100 years old, but it's unincorporated, and you won't find it. I haven't found anything on the Internet, and I've been there about five times because it's sandwiched right next door to this other town. All right. Now, I'll give you the name of it. I'm just going to give the first name because I don't want people snooping around. The name is Blackjack. I'm not even going to tell you what state it is in, but the town of Blackjack. And it's unincorporated, and they don't have a mayor or city council. But you know what? They've been doing well for over 100 years. I call it a generational wealth town, because it's passed from generation to generation to generation. So you have municipal, there's municipality income. And, you know, New York City is a municipality. But the average person, the little guy, you can start your own community, your own town, with something as small as a hamlet or a small little village. Luckenbach, Texas, is a town in Texas that is only 9 acres. That's it. It's its own municipality. And they have a website. And if you go to the website, you'll see some of the ways that Luckenbach, Texas earns their money. Some of these places, you know, a town that you can start, you can own a utility company. You start the town, you can provide the utilities. And there are villages that do that. They're cow farmers dairy farmers that earn more money from providing the village that they're in with electricity, because they have the fields, so they put a bunch of solar panels out there. They generate electricity for the community. There's subdivision income, and there's natural resources income. Natural resources income. Anyway, we're going to go to the phone lines here. First, Luckenbach, Texas, in the phone lines.
The only two things in life that make it worth living is guitars tuned good and firm feeling women. I don't need my name in the marquee lights. I got my song and I got you with me tonight. Maybe it's time we got back to the basics of love. Let's go to Luckenbach, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs and Lou Berry's train songs and Blue Eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luckenbach, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. So baby, let's sell your diamond ring, buy some boots and faded jeans and go away. This coat and tie is choking me, and in your high society you cry all day. Been so busy keeping up with the Joneses, four car garage, and we're still to the basics of love. Let's go to Luke and Buck, Texas, Waylon and Willie and the boys. This successful life we're living got us feuding like the Hatfields and McCoys. Between Hank Williams' pain songs, Newberry's train songs, and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luke and Buck, Texas, ain't nobody feeling no pain. Let's go to Luke and Buck, Texas, William Waylon and boy. This successful life we're living's got us feuding like the Hatfields and the Coys. Between the Hank Williams pain songs and Jerry Jeff train songs and blue eyes crying in the rain. Out in Luke and Bob, Texas, there ain't nobody feeling no pain.
We went through landscape literacy versus consumer mindset. We might touch on it again tomorrow, or, well, yeah, we'll touch on it again tomorrow, maybe Friday. But before I go to the phone lines here, 619-768-2945, and before I forget, if you go to our Facebook page, which is Build Solar Homes at Earthwell Forest, there's a map there. The map is titled A Map of All the Places in the U.S. Where Nobody Lives. Once you see that map, all those green areas, anywhere you see green, okay, essentially nobody lives there. All right. Now, if you click on that picture. Okay. I thought we'd have another map. All right. But the green, you see how much of the United States is empty? 97%. You should see the map of Alaska. It's online. But this is the continental United States. Everywhere you see green, nobody lives there. Now, the white areas is where you have the most populated people, the most populated areas. There are different maps for that. But the green areas, like I say, 97% of the United States is rural. Let me throw out a statistic out there. Los Angeles County. Los Angeles County, which is it's either the first or the second most populous county. I think, let me look this up right now because we're online here. Okay, let me see. Most populated, you guys help me out. Most populated county in the United States. Okay, well, I'm going to be talking about L.A. anyway. Los Angeles County, which is, let me look it up. Most populous county in the United States. Most populous, county in U.S. Okay. Yeah, I was right. Los Angeles County is the most populous county in the United States. Cook County, Chicago is number two. Harris County, where Houston is number three. Los Angeles County, there are more people that live in Los Angeles County than 40 of the 50 states in the United States. 9 million plus people. Oklahoma just has a little bit over 4 million people. It has more people than Oklahoma, Kansas, Idaho, Montana, both Dakotas. It has, that one county has, and that's why they have a homeless problem. They got a whole bunch of people crammed into a tiny space. I'm going to tell you this. If you want to go tiny, that's why I put this on our Facebook page. The green areas is where the action is at. If you want to visit what I call the real United States of America, it's in those places where nobody lives, or right near those places where nobody lives. You don't hear about police shootings in those green areas. Or civil unrest. There's no the real opportunities are right in those green areas that you see on the map. And they're all over the United States. That's where the action's at. Unless you're a mover and shaker with a bunch of money, the most populous counties in the United States, and hold it, I got a list here of a 100, I'm going to tell you where not to go. Well, you put it this way, you won't see me in these places. All right. Los Angeles County is the most populous county. I would say avoid Los Angeles County, Cook County, Harris County. That's in Texas. Maricopa County, that's where Phoenix is in Arizona. San Diego and Orange County, forget that. This is a madhouse. Orange County and L.A. County are right. Come on, that's too many people, man. Dallas in Texas, Kings County, New York, Riverside, let's see, Clark County, Nevada, King County, that's where Seattle, Washington, and King County, Washington, where Seattle, Washington is. A starter home can run you up to $1 million or more. I'm sure they got some prices lower than that, but it's high. Queens County, New York. All these, man, what's the lowest county? Tulsa County in Oklahoma, that's at 100. Here's what I go by. You know what? I'm going to use Zanesville, Ohio. Find a place that's got a population like Zanesville, Ohio that has no more than 25,000 people. And let that be your ground zero. Find a place that's got no more than 26,000 people and drive 10 minutes to 15 minutes outside of that, and you'll find a real United States of America. Because we've got over 109,000 towns in this country. We got towns from as small as one, population one, all the way up to Los Angeles County, which has got over 9-10 million people. You're not going to get rich in Los Angeles County. So what? You make $200,000 in Los Angeles County. You're going to spend half of that to keep a roof over your head. Man, give me some place like Bangor, Maine, or Nome, Alaska. Anyway, we'll go over these maps and all this in more detail tomorrow on landscape literacy. I mean, think about it. You got husbands and wives that are making $200,000 a year combined or more, and they're still struggling. Well, that's, hey, if you want to live in Manhattan, that's how it is. If I had to live in New York State, I would live in that. Here's where I would go. These three cities, Niagara, well, actually more than three, but Niagara Falls, New York, Buffalo, New York, or Rochester, New York. If you really want to prosper, head to the rural areas in those places in New York State. Okay, let me go to the phone lines. We'll continue this rant of landscape literacy tomorrow. Matter of fact, if you're in trouble in a big city, you know, because what I'm doing is, man, I had to go small. Small is actually large. I got to remember that so I can put it as a podcast, because I'll tell you my strategy. Anyway. 309 area code, your mic is open.
Hi, good morning, L.A.
Good morning.
People aren't literate about what landscapes out there, kind of like to say today. And they needed to see it. You know, I like that you put out the green. everywhere that's green, you can still go. That was kind of what I was getting out of that, because they haven't been.
Right.
I don't know if that's what you were trying to get at right there, but that's what it sounded like to me. Everywhere that's green, you have the ability.
Well, now
to go.
I'm like in Illinois where you are. There's some green areas there because you're in one of those places. Yeah, like you said, where you can see green in abundance, those are the places to go.
Exactly. Well, I agree with you there.
That's where you can, and in those, the lighter spots, it's, now here's the thing. In a lot of those green areas, your striking distance of, like if you want to go to a bowling alley, a restaurant, Walmart, a lot of those green areas are striking distance, you know, 15, 20 minutes away, maybe an hour away. But you, a lot of people would be really surprised at within, I mean, you know, everything, put it this way, everything that you think you need will be 15 minutes to maybe an hour away in a larger town. And in those green areas, those places do exist. So there's a lot of opportunity there. Or what's his name? I think he passed over. What's his name? T-Boone Pickens. T-Boone Pickens was a billionaire, oil billionaire. He lived in a, matter of fact, he lived in a town called Pampa, Texas. And I've been to Pampa a few times because I went to school in Canyon, Texas. And if you're online, put in Pampa, Texas, P-A-M-P-A. And let's see what they have on Wikipedia. Pampa, Texas, and this is where T-Boone Pickens lived now. I mean, when he was alive. I think he passed over there. Pampa has a population of 16,867 people. Then they break down the demographics on their Wikipedia page. And notable people. T-Boone Pickens, chairman of the private equity firm BP Capital Management and former CEO of Mesa Petroleum. Yeah, he passed over in 2019. Now, this guy was a billionaire, but he lived in Pampa, Texas. Walmart, Bentonville, Arkansas. I mean, have you heard of anybody making vacation plans to go to Bentonville, Arkansas? But hey, that's where Walmart. Well, hold it. Let me see. What did they start there, or are they headquartered there? Walmart. Let me see. Okay. Headquarters is in Bentonville, Arkansas. But where did they start in Bentonville? But it's these little places where, no, they started in Rogers, Arkansas, 62 years ago. All right. Rogers has a population of 69,908 people. You know, not a holiday destination for most people. But hey, it's where you can get the American dream can be launched from right there. And there's a lot of other places like that, too. So we'll go more into detail of this, like, say, tomorrow on landscape literacy, you know, versus consumer mindset. Particularly when it comes to what I wanted to bring up was comparing. But people who, like Luckenbach, Texas, the founder of Luckenbach doesn't need to compare anything, because when he bought it was just land, tumbleweeds out there. They don't have to compare it to anything because they already have a vision in their mind what they're going to do with it, what kind of income they're going to have with it. Most people who bring up what's the house next door worth, what's the house across the street worth, that's the person who's got a consumer mindset. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, consumers make the economy go. But I'm just saying you got to recognize who you're talking to. And consumer, let me put this in architect terms. They're architects and they're bricklayers. Architects can see the invisible. They can visualize a building to its completion in detail in their mind. It's not visible to anybody else. And then they can transfer what's in their mind onto a piece of paper. That's called blueprint. Many people, most people don't know how to read blueprints. It's not complicated. Yeah, I took a class on it. I'll probably take a refresher course on reading blueprints. But they translate, and then people who know how to read blueprints can take that, and builders, and then they can build the building. And some of the people that they hire are bricklayers. Bricklayer probably might not know how to read blueprints. Some do, some don't. They're very important, too, because the architect is not a carpenter. He's not framing up the place. He's not a roofer. He's not a plumber. He's not an electrician. He has a plan, but every tradesperson has to follow those plans of the architect, the visionary. The bricklayer knows how to lay there. Matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to see if I can get somebody on here because she's a bricklayer now, a professional bricklayer, and we want to get her. But they're not to be diminished. Bricklayers, I'm just saying, they're two different functions. They're two different functions. Bricklayer knows their lane. Architect knows their lane. An architect is not a bricklayer, and a bricklayer is not an architect. But they're both very important to getting things built. Okay, that's my rant on that, and we'll pick back up tomorrow on landscape literacy. And Chris, any announcements to make? Chris is still around. And then what, Thursdays, I think we have a Spanish class. The first half hour or so, we do Spanish. With Reba, the teacher, Reba La Maestra, yeah. That's on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And all right, Chris might be out building something. Okay. I'll tell you what, because we got time, we'll do another musical interlude, and we'll see if Chris is back in. Church and steeple. Okay. Like I said, tomorrow we got Spanish class to start off the podcast with Reba La Maestra. And Chris, are you back?
Yes, sir. I mean, I was here then.
You're there. Okay.
I'm here. Okay. I have my mom. I had to just be muted for a minute.
Hey, Chris, do you know anybody in Memphis, Tennessee?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because we can talk offline later today. Oh, you know what? For best for me, this time tomorrow. Because we're looking at, we got, we may as well utilize, well, we need a combination of, all right, we got the internet, everybody's got the electronics, we got our devices, we can do Zoom calls and YouTube and all that other stuff. But with some of this stuff, we need boots on the ground people to actually, you know, see us building us having, you know, go to each location every week or every month.
Right. Well, I do have a friend of mine that he's a manager of Sam's Club, and they're actually transferring him right now to Memphis. So he actually needs a home. You know?
Okay.
This could be a possibility of something in that realm. Maybe we might have him as a client.
Okay. Because, yeah, I'm looking at now if we can find, you know, it was interesting. I was talking to a college buddy of mine yesterday, and he's in Texas. He's from small town Texas. He was at Chick-fil-A. So, you know, he was impressed by the crowd was there. And this guy used to work sales at the general sales manager at a radio station. So he was impressed with, so he asked to speak to the manager, and the manager, they got to talking. And he says, well, you know, what do you do for marketing? Well, the manager of this Chick-fil-A said 40% of their business comes from app orders. You know, they have an app on their phone, and they can order what, so when the people show up, their order's ready. And I got a whole bunch of apps on my phone. So it's like, because the smartphone is like the new transistor radio. But if you have an app on your phone, you know, like Hope for Housing, if they had a dedicated app, it's like you've converted your phone into a radio station or even a TV station. So if a person wanted to tune in to anything that you had to sell, promote, educate, it's right on the phone. Let me give you an example. And apps, although everybody's heard of apps, but it's still in its pioneer phase. I'll give you an example. Everybody and their mother's heard of Airbnb. I've got an Airbnb app on my phone. Okay. And there's a lot of information, and you can, if you want to look for a vacation spot or a place in Kyrgyzstan, in Central Asia, you can find a place on Airbnb. However, what they don't have on that app right now is Airbnb. Now, I'm just putting this out there, Airbnb Radio or Airbnb Bloomington. Like, you know, when a holiday, let's say if somebody wants to go to Bloomington, Illinois for the holidays, which are coming up soon. You know, what are the top 10 Airbnb places in Bloomington, Illinois? And then what if there was on that app, you know, you can have a conversation with, you know, or a podcast that you can hear. So that hasn't been done yet on Airbnb. So A matter of fact, that's a whole new industry in itself. So I'm just saying that that's the power of apps, because a lot of younger people, let's say 30-something and below, they do apps. Even me, you know, man, I'm over 60. So I do, man, I'm looking around me. I got, what do you call it, Amazon. I get something off Amazon at least once or twice a month. You know, groceries, if I don't, I go grocery shopping via app, not Instagram, what do you call it, Instacart or Walmart or Aldi. I love Instacart, though. Or sometimes I might want, you know, I like Cuban sandwiches or Chinese food. Hey, right on the phone, app it up, place the order, and they deliver it. And I know, like, the Cuban sandwich place I like, you just order what you want through that app, and then they bring it to your front door. You pay for it, everything up, you know, in advance. So, matter of fact, you know what? That might be part of tomorrow's podcast. I think I got something lined up on that already, but I might move that to a different date. And so I'm saying all that to say, we can organize because we have enough people power online. We just have to find somebody reliable, boots on the ground. You know what? That's what we'll do tomorrow and what do you call it? Thursday and Friday. What we shall do on this podcast is organize boots on the ground people, because we've got land boots on the ground already. You know, you got it, Chris, I got it. We know other people who have it. We know boots on the ground people. We got partners, affiliates. We just need to get it all together and then start making money with it online, with online live streams. So, Chris, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I mean, we definitely need to do that. And you know, I'm looking forward to being able to work with Leva and the kids and stuff up in Chicago. I'm working on a city right now, and I'm going to start with one.
Yeah, well, Chicago, she's good for Chicago and Milwaukee. She's good for those two markets. They're only an hour apart. So,
yeah,
and you're in Bloomington, right? Then we got people in North Carolina. I desperately need somebody in Texas. I know people in Texas, but I need somebody boots on the ground in one particular county in Texas. So, and then even here in Florida, because my 4 acres is 3 hours away from me. So if we want to do something, like I said, we got all the tools. We just need that boots on the ground element. So I figure between brainstorming tomorrow and Friday, we'll have it. Then Monday we can start taking off and making money.
All right, we'll do it. Okay.
So, all right. Well, that's it for today. And Chris, I'll probably touch base with you later on this afternoon. And everybody, okay, we'll see you back. Like I said, tomorrow we're doing boots on the ground brainstorming so we can get these live streams. Oh, you know what? Before I go, I want there was a video that was done about incredible tiny homes, and the matter of fact, let me get the title. I don't want to mess it up. Incredible tiny homes. Long story short, I want to read the title as they put it. They use the word scam. Now, I disagree with what they said. Question. Let's see what comes so I can get it exactly. I didn't like the title. All right, the title is, it's a question. All right, the question, which is the headline on this one, I got to scroll up here. All right, is Incredible Tiny Homes a scam? All right. Now, I watched that video twice, and I disagree with the title and with the title alone. And like I said, I watched the video twice. I even commented on it because I asked the person who did the video. I'll put some questions to her. But I can vouch for Incredible Tiny Homes. I've been following them for about 6-7 years now. Randy Jones and the Incredible Tiny Homes staff, they, number one, Randy is, in my opinion, has been very transparent from day one. Number two, they have several videos, 5-6 years, no, 6-7 years probably, of videos of them actually building tiny homes. You can see their growth of how they've grown through those videos, actually building tiny homes. They have videos of customers who have come to Tennessee, Newport, Tennessee, and they've picked up their tiny homes and then drove them back to wherever they came from. You have very transparent. So I don't even know how they even came up with that title, Is Incredible Tiny Homes a Scam? Now, they mentioned that, you know, some, you know, they had some disgruntled employees. Well, when I responded to them, not the Incredible Tiny Homes, but to the person who did the video, I said General Motors has 500 staff attorneys that they just deal with legal issues all day. That's what they do. 500 of them, in-house attorneys, in addition to their customer service department, which handles complaints or requests. That's just the nature of business. You know, and I said, also, name one Fortune 500 company that doesn't have a battery of staff attorneys, in-house attorneys that handle problems. Name one Fortune 500 company that doesn't have a disgruntled employee. Ford, IBM, Apple Computers, Amway Products, Mary Kay Products. You can find somebody. The larger you get, you're going to find somebody that's not happy. There's never been a company, particularly a large company, that's had a 100% I'm happy quotient. Not one. And there never will be one. You know, when we elect the president of the United States, not everybody, you know, some people don't, not everybody votes for whoever won. So I think they were unfair with that title and some of the metrics that they use and whatnot. But anyway, Chris, I don't know if you saw that video, but now I reviewed some of her other videos. So after reviewing some of her other videos, now she admits that she's a tiny, you know, she really loves tiny houses. She liked to build her own tiny house one day and maybe start her own community, because Randy Jones has got 2 tiny house communities so far that I know about, and it's successful. But when she sees the other side of the coin, I think she might have to come back and retract some of her Well, take that video down and put up another one.
That wasn't like, it wasn't one of Randy's videos, was it? Was somebody making a video about Randy?
Yeah, it's somebody who made a video about Incredible Tiny Home. And in the title, I'm reading right now, is Incredible Tiny Homes a scam? They pose it as a question. So, but I can't even see where anybody would even pose a question like that because, like I said, I've been following him for 6-7 years now.
All you got to do is drive him and see it.
And I'm going to recommend that to her. I'm going to send her a note today. I'm going to say, I suggest that you drive, fly, whatever you got to do to get to Newport, Tennessee, and spend the day at Incredible Tiny Homes. I found out about him when I went to a tiny house retreat up in Vermont. And I carpooled with somebody, and she was the one that told me about it. Now, we're going back 6-7 years now. Back then, Randy Jones did pick up the phone. But now, you know, business is booming that, you know, he's got other people to pick up phone. But, like you just said, Chris, I'm going to send a note to her today, this lady who did that video. I'm going to suggest go to Newport, Tennessee, spend the day there. Spend the day there. And I believe if she spends the day there, the video that she put up on YouTube, she'll take that down and then replace it with something new. That's what I believe. But the guy, I can't say anything bad about Randy Jones and Incredible Tiny Homes. And they're innovators. They're mass producing. I mean, they're putting out product on a daily basis. And they deliver. They got plenty of videos where they deliver. They deliver all the time. They deliver every day. Anyway, that's my take. So, wait a minute. Chris, anything to add?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they did have a day with me that way. You know.
Okay. Okay. Well, on that note, I'll call you later today on so we can prep for tomorrow and Friday because, like I said, we got the network. We just need to get that boots on the ground element and go from there. So, on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.